I'd like to call the meeting of the Finance Education Finance Committee to order and use the approval of the minutes. May I have a motion? Representative Erickson, moves the minutes.
I'll move the minutes.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, minutes are approved. Chair Garofalo, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 63 for passage and referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
Chair Garofalo moves passage this bill and referred to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Oh.
Mr. Chair, I don't have any material, so I'm uncomfortable.
Representative Briner, just one moment, please.
Get that. All right.
Mr. Chair, I'll wait until all members have signaled to me that they are ready and have all their materials.
You should learn, Representative Bills, to treat her.
She's. Okay. Well, thank you. Mr. Chairman, House File 63 is an alternative pathway, bills for alternative pathways to teacher licensure. We all agree that one of the most important criteria in improving student achievement is that of teacher effectiveness. Most recently, the best testimony I could talk about in favor of alternative pathways came from Secretary Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education for President Obama. Last Friday at a luncheon for a local group, he said, he was shocked. He was shocked that alternative pathways for licensure do not exist in Minnesota. And I think that's the best statement you could make. Before I commence any further, though, there is a technical amendment that I'll have Ms. Larson talk about, but I'll also, there is a controversial portion of it that I'll address as well.
Chair Garofalo, would you like to move that technical amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the A3 amendment.
Chair Garofalo moves the A3 amendment.
And at this point, I'll have Ms. Larson cover those items, and I'll elaborate on it.
Mr. Chair, members, in looking at the H00-63A3 amendment to House File 63, the first engrossment, the following changes would be made in the first engrossment. On page 2, lines 32 and 33, those changes indicate that not only would an out-of-state applicant be required to take content area exams, but pedagogy exams as well, if their diploma or degree from out-of-state is not essentially equivalent. On page 3 of the first engrossment, on line 17, there's a insert the word applicable. Not all content area exams apply to a licensure candidate, so it's to indicate that those content areas that do apply would be required, but not all of them. On page 4, on line 9, it's a technical change. The language currently says local, but the standard phrase used in the law when talking about collective bargaining agreements is the exclusive representative of the teachers, so we've changed local to exclusive to be consistent. And in addition, there is a sentence being added that would prohibit a collective bargaining agreement from interfering with the ability of a school board to employ a teacher who is prepared under this section. On page 4, lines 10 and 11, the may is changed to must so that a local site team would include teachers and school administrators and might also include post-secondary faculty, depending upon who the program provider is. On page 4, line 15, this is also clarification. In addition to the evaluation looking to standards of effective practice, there would also be a requirement to include subject matter content standards. On page 4, line 23, this pertains to applicants from out of state. It indicates that the evaluation of the teacher candidate from out of state must be provided by the local site team in the school where that teacher candidate last taught. On page 4, line 32, there is a technical correction to the head note. We are not talking about qualified teachers. We're only talking about highly qualified teachers. And finally, there is a new section being added that would repeal the existing statutory section on alternative teacher licensure.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Any discussion on the A3 amendment? Chair Garofalo renews his motion to move the A3 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That is approved. Chair Garofalo.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we have some testifiers both in support and opposed to the bill as it stands right now, so I think we should move on to that before we have further discussion.
Fantastic. Our first, what do we have? Ms. Wolf, would you please state your name for the record? Oh, I'm sorry.
My name is Crystal Bracky.
Crystal, thank you.
So thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo and members of the committee for welcoming me today. I am thrilled to be here to speak on behalf of Teach for America, which is one example of a high-quality alternative certification program that this bill is seeking to address. I want to apologize in advance for those of you that have met or previously heard testimony from Daniel Sellers, our executive director here in Minnesota. I will try to not be too redundant or to at least have a slightly different voice than Daniel does. So I, as an education junkie, probably not surprisingly, did some homework to get ready for today and was listening to some of the testimonies that you all have previously heard this week. And I just wanted to say it's inspiring to hear the conversations that this committee is having about education in Minnesota and what it's going to take to ensure that each and every child in our state has access to a high-quality education. For me, as for all of you, it's a very personal issue. I attended public schools in Minnesota for my entire education, K through 12, and had what I think is a pretty rare opportunity to experience the differences in our educational system firsthand. I started kindergarten at a diverse and relatively low-income public school in St. Paul and ended my senior year of high school at a nearly all-white and wealthy suburban high school. You know what the statistics are. People have been talking with you about them all week, about what that means for students at those two types of schools. It is bleak. I believe it is unacceptable. And I can tell you from my own experience of teaching in a low-income community that it doesn't need to be this way. We do not need the achievement gap that exists here in Minnesota. And that's what Teach for America specifically is aiming to do. To ensure that the socioeconomic factors, the school system factors, and honestly some of the prevailing ideology about what low-income students are able to achieve are not roadblocks to the academic success of our students. And what I hope to share with you over the next couple of minutes is our organization's approach, the results that we have had to date, and I think the main things that support us in getting those results. So we know that the achievement gap has many complex causes, and it's going to take a tremendous amount of work from all of us to close it. The approach that we take at Teach for America is twofold. Firstly, to make an immediate impact on academic achievement by having thousands of highly talented new teachers enter classrooms each year, currently in 39 communities across the country, including schools here in the Twin Cities area. And secondly, to support our alumni base, which is currently about 20,000 strong, 20 years into Teach for America's history, to make a long-term systemic impact on closing this gap, both within and outside of education. So I'm sure the question is, how are we actually doing 20 years into this work? And I believe without a doubt we are working and we are making progress at closing this gap. And I'll just share with you a couple highlights for why I believe this so strongly. In terms of the academic achievement results in our teachers' classrooms, Two studies that were released within the last 12 months provide an incredible view into the results here. The Tennessee State Board of Education just released results from their study on the effectiveness of 41 teacher preparation programs in their state, with Teach for America Tennessee, which includes our teachers in Nashville and Memphis, being one of those programs. The data shows that our teachers in Tennessee, in their first and second years of teaching, had a statistically significant positive difference on student achievement in every evaluated subject, which was math, reading, language arts, science, and social studies, in comparison to other beginning teachers. Compared to all veteran teachers, so people that have been teaching three or more years, Teach for America Tennessee teachers were the only ones to have a statistically significant positive difference in three of those subjects, math being the one that was a positive difference but not statistically significant. One other recent study that I will say gave me personal pride, it was done by the University of North Carolina, and personal pride because North Carolina is where I taught for 2 years. UNC wanted to better understand the effect of student achievement of their graduates from their traditional teacher preparation program. And at every grade level and every subject studied, Teach for America teachers did as well as or better than the traditionally prepared Carolina students. The researchers at UNC noted that Teach for America, and I quote, represents an opportunity for UNC and North Carolina to learn and improve, end quote, and recommended that UNC identified elements of the Teach for America model that could be, quote, portable and scalable, end quote, to their own university system program. In terms of the long-term impact on the education system that Teach for America is having, just a couple of things that I would like to share here. As I mentioned before, we have nearly 20,000 alumni across the country. 67% continue to work in education full-time, nearly 500 as school leaders, a handful as superintendents, and thousands as classroom teachers. We have a growing number of alumni that have been elected to public office, including a state senator in Colorado and a state senator in Maryland who was just elected. But what I think is probably most telling is actually that 93% of our alumni report that they support Teach for America's mission and work in closing the achievement gap, whether through their career, philanthropy, volunteer work, or graduate study that they are enrolled in. Given all of that, I think of it as a full-blown movement of leaders over 20,000 strong that are committed to education reform. So just a couple quick thoughts for, I think, how we get these results at Teach for America. The first is connected to something that I heard Mr. Hutchinson speak to a couple of days ago, which is teacher recruitment and selection. We are highly selective about who we accept because we know the challenges that teachers, especially first-year teachers in high-need and high-challenge areas, will face. We have a selection rate of 12%. We had 46,000 people apply last year, and we have currently 4,500 first-year teachers. The average GPA of those teachers is 3.6. 92% of them held leadership roles on their campus. We are truly looking for the best of the best that are going to be the highest quality teachers for our kids. We have our incoming teachers do 35 hours of pre-work. Then we spend 350 hours, and I would say probably even more than that, with them for 5 weeks over the summer where they are teaching summer school and they are enrolled in intensive coursework. We also do a tremendous amount of ongoing support, whether it's through the district professional development that all of our teachers receive. Each one of our teachers also receives an estimated 40 to 60 additional hours of coaching and support from Teach for America staff members in addition to what their school provides. So I know I have thrown a lot of words and a lot of numbers at you, and there are more people still to speak. So in closing, I just want to reiterate why this matters so much. Our students deserve to have outstanding teachers, regardless of where they live or what race or ethnicity they are. Education should not determine one's path in life, and right now, the sad reality is that in Minnesota, it oftentimes does. I am thrilled that as a state, we are committed to opening pathways to getting more great teachers for all of our students. And I just want to thank you and appreciate the work that this committee is doing to make that happen.
Thank you, Ms. Branny. Any questions? Representative Mariano.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, I came in late. I apologize. Your last name is?
Bracky.
Bracky. Ms. Bracky, thank you for your testimony. Very quickly, I think she might have done House File 63 some damage by talking about how TFA candidates became state senators instead of members of the better body in any legislature. Speaks to the quality issue, I think, Representative Garofalo.
We're going to have to address this, Representative.
I'm wondering, you said, and just very quickly, you said something about the UNC, the relationship between UNC and TFA. Can you just say a little bit more about that? Because it's a point that I really want to drive home about one of the important things, I think, or possibilities before us is, in fact, to have a presence that has an impact, not only in the classroom, first and foremost, but also an impact on our traditional higher ed teacher prep programs. So maybe you can just say a little bit more about whether that's been, it sounds like a very positive experience and how structured that is, what the relationship has been between UNC and TFA in that regard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, thank you. It's a very good question. The relationship with the University of North Carolina, I think, has probably looked very different at different points in our history, specifically in North Carolina. This study was just released, so I think we're still learning, you know, from seeing this interest and enthusiasm from a very large, very well-respected school of education provides a lot of opportunities for us to talk about the things that we do in training and supporting our teachers and their interest now in actually scaling some of that for their program. So I know the team that is in North Carolina is working closely with them to figure out what that actually looks like and what that means. I will say I think it's a place where we have tremendous opportunity to do more and to do better than what we have currently done. And in all of the places where we have teachers, really think about how we're working with schools of education in a way that is developing all of the teachers in a particular community and sharing lessons across our two organizations.
Thank you.
Is that Mary Ellen? Is that fine?
Thank you, Mr.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ragi. Any other questions? All right, thank you for your testimony. I will call on Ms. Blankenship, Mr. Blankenship, Ms. Carvello. We be coming together, Ms. Carvello, is that right? From Hiawatha Learning Center. Welcome, and please state your name for the record.
Okay. Mr. Chair, thank you, and members of the committee, thank you. My name is Shannon Blankenship. I'm the school director at Hiawatha Leadership Academy in South Minneapolis. Our current academy, and as I've testified in the past, 95% of our scholars are free or reduced lunch, and 98% are African American or Latino. And if we stay on track of where we're currently at, 100% of our scholars will go to college. I'm here today really to support reciprocity as a school leader. As a school leader, I approach hiring my staff with the mentality of casting the biggest net possible to recruit the top talent with the mindset that the achievement gap is possible to solve. As President Obama reminded us on Tuesday, we are a nation that does big things, and closing our achievement gap is a civil rights issue of our generation. On behalf of the 37 teachers at Hiawatha Leadership Academy, we believe it's our answer to our president's call. Like most high-tech companies and local foundations here in Minnesota, I need to be able to conduct a national search for the most innovative, diverse, and effective teachers to serve our students, and more importantly, who can build relationships with our parents and families. And I ask really the committee today to consider this question: why wouldn't we want the most talented people to come to Minnesota to serve our community? More importantly, why wouldn't we want our native Minnesotans, the sons and daughters who grew up here in the Twin Cities, currently living elsewhere, to come home and continue to do this important work to close the achievement gap in the community in which they were raised? Members, these talented people, more often than not, are not returning home to teach because of the barriers of our current licensure policy. Last year, I interviewed 10 possible teaching candidates who were outstanding, getting outstanding results in their respective schools, 8 of which who are native Minnesotans, 2 of which whose spouses grew up here and were hoping to relocate and continue teaching. Many wanted to come home to their native Minnesota to teach. They were licensed in states that where they taught and had measurable results. However, after pursuing and looking at the process to get licensure, they became overly discouraged by the amount of red tape, lack of clarity on how to actually get a license, and in many cases having to go back to graduate school. However, today, to my right here, I have Miss Hattie Carvalho. She's one of our outstanding special education teachers, and I'm glad she's here today because she took the risk to say, hey, I'm willing to try this licensure game in Minnesota and come home and serve our kids. Just a little bit about Ms. Carvalho for the committee. Hattie, in 2 short years, has set up our school's child study team as the head of special education, taught our most challenging scholars in reading and math, facilitated some of the most difficult parent meetings in both English and Spanish, and visits the homes of our scholars and makes sure that we're not only serving the needs of our students as outlined in their individual education plans, but more importantly, making sure that we don't misdiagnose or mislabel our children. Remember, she's the answer to President Obama's national call to be a teacher, serve your country. Members, I ask that when you create policy and think about the impacts of policy and finance in conjunction, that we think about how do we expand the net possible to bring the best talent home that wants to serve our kids and put our kids and families first, and I believe that's through reciprocity.
Ms. Carvalho, question. Welcome, and please state your name.
Continue. My name is Hattie Carvalho. I'm here to share sort of a personal side of the reciprocity piece. I am originally from Minnesota. I grew up on the east side of St. Paul, attended St. Paul Public Schools, K through 12, went on to Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, where I studied geography. And in my senior year of college, decided that, in sort of making my career decision, the best step for me was to find an avenue to be able to give back. I really recognized that I was incredibly fortunate to have a really, really positive educational experience in St. Paul Public Schools. And I felt like I needed to sort of pay that forward because I recognized that there were kids all across our country, in Minnesota included, that didn't get all the opportunities that I had. At that point, I applied to Teach for America and joined the Eastern North Carolina Corps in 2007. I was alternatively licensed through the state of North Carolina and worked as a middle school teacher, teaching students in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade with special education needs. It was an incredible experience to be welcomed into a new community and to be able to invest in my students and have them invest in me, and I saw incredible academic gains during the 2 years that I was there with the kids that I worked with. Little insight into that, we saw average 2 years of growth in reading, according to the developmental reading assessment for children, 2 years of growth in math, according to the Brigance Comprehensive Basic Skills Assessment. And I think sort of most tellingly for my students, 83% of my students scored in the proficient range on the state end of grade exams in writing and math for the first time in their lives. Finally made that mark. So that was very exciting for their families and for them. After my 2 year commitment, I was deciding what to do, to stay in North Carolina or to return home to Minnesota, because my heart really is here, my family is here, the people I care about are here. And I recognize that the kids in Minnesota deserve teachers with the same goals that I had. I applied to Hiawatha Leadership Academy and was very, very excited to make my move home and to start teaching here. I soon realized that it wasn't going to be as easy as I had hoped. I realized that there was no system sort of in place that recognized any of the forms of experience that I had that I could bring to the table outside of an education degree through a college or university in Minnesota. The current system didn't look at any of the things that I could bring to the table. Teacher proficiency exams I had taken, student test scores, principal evaluations, mentor-teacher evaluations. I was granted a temporary variance, thankfully, and have been teaching for the last 2 years. Unfortunately, it's something that I need to reapply for each year. There's no guarantee, and there's a 2 year limit on it. Not only that being a challenge for me in the reapplication process and the uncertainty. I think it has the most implication for the students that I work with. I think we'd all agree that our kids really deserve consistent education from people that really do believe in high results and academic achievement. And I think I've had the joy of following my kids for the past 2 years, and I really hope for their sake that I'll be able to continue on with that in the coming years. I'm truly committed to the work that I do for children, but I, as Mr. Blankenship noted, there's a lot of red tape and a lot of challenges to that, and I want to continue to work in Minnesota, but it has raised questions in my mind of whether I should move back either to North Carolina to another state that does have reciprocity with the license that I was given. I know that there are other teachers who are from Minnesota who are eager to come back who have faced similar challenges to me. I do believe that there really should be other avenues for teachers to demonstrate their competence and effectiveness. So I thank you for taking the time to consider this.
Thank you, Ms. Carvola. Any Representative Mariani?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony, Ms. Carvalho. And I'm glad you came back to Minnesota. It sounds like that's working out really well, not only for you, but also for our Minnesota students here. And hopefully we'll find a way to keep you here. You offered some testimony on the reciprocity issue. Representative Graff and I have kind of gone back and forth around the reciprocity issue in our respective bills, and I've struggled with it. What I'm reminded when we craft our bill is that we're not crafting a bill for Teach for America, we're crafting a bill for an alternative pathway. And then depending on what bill we're looking at, expecting certain conditions spelled out in there. Mm-hmm. My question for you, though, is you were TFA, and so let me add this very quickly. As you look at how TFA works here in Minnesota, how does that compare to your experience, what you went through in North Carolina? In terms of how the program was structured, is it similar, dissimilar? What can you tell us about the parallel between the Minnesota TFA and your experience in UNC, or in North Carolina, rather?
Ms. Carvalho.
Thanks for your question. I think they're very similar. The structure of the program is very similar. As Ms. Brackey described, all of the preparation beforehand, it aligned exactly. My similar to core members in Minnesota, 2 years of ongoing teacher education through a university cohort and ongoing support through Teach for America organization and staff development, weekends, workshops, professional development opportunities along the way. But I would say almost identically aligned.
Thank you.
Thank you both for your testimony. And, Mr. Chair, we are coming up on the 15 to 20 minute mark. Do you have more testifiers to speak in favor?
I think that we're.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
I'm John McCall. I'm the Executive Director of the Office of New Schools for Minneapolis Public Schools. Formerly was the founder of Shannon School, Hiawatha Leadership Academy. And I just wanted to speak representing Minneapolis in support of House File 63, Mr. Chair and members. First of all, to thank all of you for supporting a variety of versions of this important issue, alternative certification, and particularly wanted to thank our Minneapolis champions, Representative Dabney and Slocum, and also Representative Mariani, who is second to none in his advocacy for kids in Minneapolis and throughout the state who are struggling. Specifically, like Shannon, I'd like to speak about the reciprocity provision. Which hasn't got a lot of attention, but actually in some ways is more significant to closing the achievement gap as significant as any other part of this bill. We are trying to do whatever it takes in Minneapolis to close this gap. And as you know, we are far short of that objective. We need, and districts need, and principals need all the tools at their disposal to address the learning gap and get the best people in front of the kids who need it the most. Many of you may not know that the 2006 National Teacher of the Year, Jason Kamras, who was featured in the film Waiting for Superman, would not be allowed to teach in Minnesota right now. Daniel Sellers, who, in addition to being an eloquent testifier, was an excellent teacher in North Carolina, would not be allowed to teach in Minnesota right now without going back to the finish line and going back to grad school. There's all kinds of other stories like that. There are hundreds of Minnesotans who left this state because we didn't have Teacher America in Minnesota, and who are now not able to come back home and share their talents with Minnesota classrooms. So I'll just give you one example, and Representative Slocum was with us in visiting the Noble schools in Chicago last month, and you saw how this is probably one of the nation's strongest high schools, a network of public charter schools in Chicago that is closing the gap. Most of their teachers are alternatively certified. We are trying to bring this model to benefit high school kids in Minneapolis. They would not be able to bring teachers from Chicago to Minneapolis to help close the gap. And so we ask you to stay strong in your leadership of this part of the bill. We know it's controversial, and we know, in saying this, we know that Minnesota has many, many wonderful teachers. I'm a fourth-generation graduate of Minnesota Public Schools. My mother-in-law was a Minneapolis public school teacher. There are great teachers in Minnesota and in Minneapolis public schools now. But why should we create or keep barriers that keep many of them? As you know, Minnesota is one of the very few states that has these kinds of high barriers against high-quality teachers. And I just wanted to say one last thing, which is if the state of New York 40 years ago had this kind of provision, our current governor would not have been allowed to begin his career teaching inner-city kids in New York. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bacall. We do have a question for you, Representative Anzos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm hearing frequent references to North Carolina, and I'm hearing that in terms of reciprocity, North Carolina has licensing standards, but for a yet to be explained to me, Minnesota has licensing barriers. How can one state have standards and another state be described as having barriers? And why shouldn't we have a standardized licensing system?
Well, Mr. Bacall?
I would just, I think the advocates of the bill probably could be more articulate than I can be on that point. Minnesota does have high quality standards right now, and what this is not doing away with those standards. In fact, the candidates would have to submit their materials to the Board of Teaching and to obtain their certification. They'd also have to be hired by a Minnesota school district, a public school district. So superintendents and principals using their discretion, which is so important to be able to hire the strongest candidates. What we're doing is letting local districts, local principals, hire licensed people but who may have been prepared in an alternative program in another state with the approval of the Board of Teaching. So it's a very limited but needed pathway.
Mr. Bacall.
So is it accurate to say that you're using the word barrier and standard interchangeably?
Mr. Bacall.
I'm still not getting the clarity I need.
Well, I appreciate that, Representative Anzalk. Sorry, I wasn't clear. The It is a barrier. I think it's fair to describe a barrier where the National Teacher of the Year is not able to teach in Minnesota.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Bacall. Anyone else?
That's it.
Thank you. We would call on Ms. Allswager. I'm sorry. Welcome, and please state your name.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswager, serve as lobbyist for Education Minnesota, and I will tell you that I am a former teacher, licensed in Minnesota, taught in rural Minnesota. I moved to North Carolina, and I had to take a college class at UNC in order to teach. So I thought I would, I wasn't going to say that originally, but I thought that that would be important for you to hear. Then I moved to New Jersey, and I had to take a couple of tests because we didn't have that we had different requirements. I think the point is every state has local state control, and they get to determine their own licensure standards. And do you recall what John Mielek said from the licensing division at the Department of Education? He said, Minnesota has an incredibly respected license for teachers. In fact, teachers from other people who want to be teachers will sometimes come to Minnesota to get their degree to be licensed because that they know that the quality of licensure in Minnesota is so good that it's so respected that other states will accept it. I have to tell you, when I came back to Minnesota and to teach in suburban Minnesota, I was so pleased. One of the main points I want to give to you today is that you, I am sure, are very proud of the Minnesota teachers that we have in this state. And they are very proud of their colleagues, and they are very proud of their profession. And they are held in high regard everywhere. All students deserve a great education, and I want to state right from the beginning, we are not opposed to Teach for America. We are not opposed to other teacher licensing alternatives. What we are concerned about is making sure that those individuals meet certain standards. Let me tell you our standards, and they're really quite simple. And rather than having a fight about this, let's figure out how we can work together to make sure that the people who are trained alternatively are ready to teach kids. So what do we want? Our Minnesota teachers believe that we should have a go ahead and absolutely take all the tests, the pedagogy, the license, basic skills, and so on. We believe that any program must be partnered with a higher ed institution that has a teacher prep program. That's a level of quality, a standard that I think everybody could agree to. Partner with a higher ed teacher prep program. We're not saying they have to be involved all of the time, but let's partner with higher ed. We also believe, and I think as parents, we would want this for the people teaching our kids. We also believe that anybody who is teaching should have a college degree in that content area or related field. Do you want your kids to be taught by someone who doesn't have a degree in science to be teaching science? This bill would allow, and I love art teachers, or art majors, I guess, but this would allow an art major to teach science. This would allow a philosophy major to teach math. This would allow a journalism degree to teach economics. We believe that the individuals should have the knowledge necessary. A content test, which is required in this bill, we do not believe shows the breadth and the depth that a college degree would give you. And another important component that we believe should be in alternative licensure is a student teaching component. This bill provides for 200 hours of intensive preparation. You know, Education Minnesota can support that in an alternative teacher prep program. We've compromised, we've said, okay, let's do a 200-hour teacher prep program. However, what this bill does not have is ongoing, every day, all day, student teaching. An hour a day, or 2 hours a day, in the same classroom, in different classrooms, doesn't give you the real experience of being a teacher. When I first started teaching, or any teacher, ask any teacher, one of the most valuable things that they had in their whole teacher prep program was student teaching. Why? Because you are put in that situation where you have to manage it from the day you walk, the hour you walk in, to the minute you leave. You have to manage 30, 35 kids, their emotional needs, their curriculum needs, their learning needs, their personal needs, the needs of their parents, the demands of their parents, the demands of the administrator, the demands that, or the mandates you have put on them in terms of meeting the standards. They're able to follow 35 kids, 30 kids, all day, every day, and be held accountable for them. Going in and teaching a class 1 day, 1 hour a day, every day for 5 weeks, is a great experience. But it doesn't give you, in our opinion, the assurance that they can manage a classroom all day, every day. And would you, as parents, feel that a teacher has met a standard that you can live with if they don't have that ongoing experience? Now, this might surprise you. Education Minnesota supports the probationary period that we have. It's 3 years. Well, we would like to maybe have it a little shorter, but we support the probationary period where an administrator can say, after year one, sorry, you're not cutting it, and you'll have to find another occupation or try a different something. We support that. Why? Because we want quality teachers in our classroom. And what this bill does is takes away the requirement for student teaching when someone can prove that they can do this. If you don't need the student teaching requirement, why do we even have 3 years of probation? Let's get rid of the 3 years probation. I mean, it doesn't fit for us. So I will just conclude by stating we are not opposed to TFA. We are supportive of alternative routes, but quality is very important, and jumping through a few hoops should not be that shouldn't be that problematic, because we want people who have demonstrated success in the classroom. We want people who have a degree in the area that they're going to be teaching, and we would like it connected with higher ed. So we would encourage all of you to work with Education Minnesota to find something that meets those standards, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Allswager. We do have a couple questions. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I find it insulting to the dedicated principals, superintendents, and school board members to imply that they would not hire somebody with the background, with the a science background to teach science. I think as a school board member, I never would have stood by and let's hire a philosophy or a social studies teacher to teach science, and I think it's ludicrous that we don't trust our superintendents and principals and school boards to do the right thing for the communities, because that's why they're involved where they are.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Alzweiger, nice to see you again. And you know, I have some tough questions for you. And I will raise the first question about the tests that our teacher candidates take and ask you to comment on the fact that TFA candidates, or I'm sure other candidates going through alternative pathways, according to Garofalo's bill, Representative Garofalo's bill, will have to pass all of the tests before they go into the program. And our teacher candidates don't even have to pass the basic skills test when they go into the classroom. How do you respond to that?
Ms. Alzweiger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, if we go back a number of years, I can give some history why that happened. Why? Because we wanted more teachers of color from other areas, languages, to come in. We had an Asian population that was coming into Minnesota, and the districts wanted to make sure that they had people who spoke that language, and there were some, they felt that, I believe it was former Representative McCollum who brought that forward to try to get teachers of color and teachers who spoke other language in. I think that's a great question to talk about, Representative Erickson. Why is that? Let's have that debate. We're open to having that discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
I tend to agree with Representative Quam about the local decision authority. You know, Representative Garofalo's bill does not allow a school district to hire these candidates just willy-nilly. They're going to have to make an agreement, as is the bargaining unit. And that's local decision-making. And I would think that your association would want to uphold that local control and honor those elected officials who are in charge of those school districts. So why are you opposed to that, as Representative Quam mentioned, school districts making decisions to hire someone to teach in an area in which they do not have that degree?
Ms. Alzweiger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, there are so many professions out there that have licensing standards, electricians, plumbers, teachers, doctors, nurses, everybody, many professions, CPAs, you name it, they have licensing standards. Why? So that the individuals who are going to employ them, use them, hire them, subcontract with them, whatever it is, we know that the pool is a high quality and meets the standards. It is a level of quality that would be met. I'm sure superintendents, administrators make great hiring decisions. This really has nothing to do with the hiring decisions by administrators. This has to do with the pool, the quality of candidate, and do they meet the standards. And the decision of the content degree is not made by the administrator. That would be through whatever the alternative licensing program is. They could choose to say that in order to get a science license, you have to have a degree in a science degree. But that is not what this bill does. This is about the pool, not about the employers.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, those are pretty weak arguments, Ms. Alzweiger, but let me ask you about student teaching. The last student teacher I had only taught one section of my high school English. That's the only time I saw her during the day, was for that 1 hour, and she taught one other course during the day. So that meant she had 2 hours during the day in a high school classroom for, I think it was, 4 weeks. That was not every day. That was not for an entire day in front of students. That was for 2 hours. And I have to tell you, some student teachers I did not pass I sent them back to St. Cloud State University and said, start over again or get out of teaching. But, you know, it's a weak argument to say that you're going to be a highly qualified, in your words, or qualified, just because you're going to be in a classroom every day, all day. No teacher is in his or her classroom every day, all day, whether secondary, elementary, middle school. We all had breaks from our students' time to prepare, and these student teachers had that time to prepare. I would think for the TFA or the other candidates who are using the alternative pathway that this is something they also need, and believe me, they're student teachers. So I don't even need to comment on that. I just think that your arguments are not upholding our profession, because I trust in school boards, and I trust in programs such as Teach for America. I trust in our higher ed institutions, who have brought before us now a teacher performance assessment that is going to make higher education for our teacher candidates a little bit more difficult than it has been in the past. And that's going to be applicable to TFA and other teacher candidates as well, whatever pathway they choose. So we are moving in a direction of making our profession, and it's yours and mine, highly qualified in the eyes of both the public and ourselves through the changes that we're making. We've moved into the 21st century, Ms. Allzweiger. We're not status quo anymore in the 20th century. And what we're learning about Teach for America and other programs that offer alternative pathways is just something we should be so delighted and so excited about, because we have heard the results of these candidates in classrooms in Minneapolis, Brooklyn Center, in our charter schools. We know they're succeeding, and I think you're discounting the talent that comes with those who choose an alternative pathway.
So I believe you'd like to comment.
I'll keep my comments to that brief, Mr. Chair. I want to make very clear that we are not saying that just because someone goes through an ongoing, all-day, every-day teaching experience means that they're going to be good. That's why we want them to do it under the direction of a licensed teacher who can supervise them. So if they do not do well, they do not continue. And Representative Erickson, this does happen. What you did as a supervising teacher, where you did not let someone get a teaching license, that's good. If someone can't cut it in student teaching, we don't want them to teach. You did exactly the right thing. And with this program, this bill, you wouldn't even have the opportunity to do what Representative Erickson did in a student teaching experience, to say this person didn't make it.
Thank you. We do have just a couple more questions we'll have from Representative Loon and Representative Bills, but then we do need to move forward. So Representative Loon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try to be brief. I know I've been listening to this issue for, I guess this is going on the third year. We covered it extensively last year when it was on Representative Mariani's committee. So I just, you know, a comment, I guess, more than anything, and perhaps you'd want to respond a little bit, Ms. Allzweiger, but, you know, it sounds to me like perhaps Education Minnesota may be moving slightly on this issue, and I'm pleased about that. And, you know, I come to this issue, again, as a parent and concerned about the quality of our teachers in our classrooms, and I do think generally Minnesota has a very high quality and high standards for who we allow in our classrooms. However, I don't believe necessarily there's only one way to come to that level of quality, and I think that's what we're debating today, whether or not there's another way to get to that. And I guess I'm a little concerned about your comments that seem to be all directed on the input side of that equation, that, you know, specifics of that training versus the outcomes of that training. And I guess I take a great deal of comfort in the extensive time that we spent setting a program like Teach for America and the years it's been in service and the data that it's put forward. And our testifier today alluded to two new studies that are showing, you know, very convincingly that when you measure student growth, student achievement under the direction of these alternatively licensed teachers through Teach for America, they are improving student performance very measurably. And from my perspective, that is what's important here. And we need to be doing that for all of our teachers. And it's important that you're well-trained and well-prepared, but ultimately what we want is to make sure those teachers can effectively improve student growth and learning in the classroom. And I'll allow you to comment to that.
Ms. Allswager.
Yeah, I'll just keep my comments brief, and then I'll just give a little summary if it can finish here. But I do think that we all have the same goal here. And we, your comments about making sure somebody can do it, the job and be successful, we think that that added layer of student teaching does it in the content degree. So I want to conclude by saying that, as I stated earlier, Education Minnesota is very willing to work with anybody to try to find a solution to this and to have an alternative route that works and that maintains quality and makes sure that they can demonstrate that they are able to handle a classroom before they get fully licensed. So I'll be happy. I'll be around here. I know that you have other people.
One more question. Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Allswager, I'd like to ask you a question, but I might have to defer also to Representative Garofalo or Representative Mariani, who seem to know the Teach for America program pretty well. Where does this summer training take place that the Teach for America folks go through? Is it a specific area, or is it just any school in the state, or is it targeted?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bills, I know the answer to the question. I would just prefer if Mr. Blankenship gave the answer, just because this is more than a Teach for America bill. This is an alternative pathways. That's what I'm here in support of. Yes, I support Teach for America, but I just would like Mr. Blankenship just to give that answer. But
Mr. Blankenship? Thank you, Ms. Allswager.
Oh, and I did have a question.
Thank you for your testimony.
I do have a question for Ms. Allswager, too.
Ms. Allswager, sorry about wait that. Just one moment. We'll hear from Mr. Blankenship first.
Representative, could you repeat the question, please?
Oh, sure. I was just wondering, and not really a Teach for America question. It's just a matter of this program, for example. Where do they receive their summer training period, or is it targeted somehow, or is there a plan behind it?
Mm-hmm. Over the last 20 years, when Teach for America has been in existence, I know they've initially began their summer training in Houston, Texas. As the program has grown to serve over 39 regions across the U.S., don't quote me on this exactly, but somewhere between 9 and 12 institutes that serve major both rural and urban markets. So I can tell you off the top of my head as an alumni and also as a school leader that has gone back and worked at these summit institutes to train the upcoming core. We have institutes in New York, Atlanta, the Mississippi Delta. So if you think about the challenges that affect some of our rural students, many of our Native American students who live in areas of New Mexico and Arizona, there's culturally relevant base teaching that happens there, as well as in Los Angeles, Chicago, and there's probably a few others that I can't remember right now.
Representative Bills. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Blankenship, am I correct in assuming then that these experiences are targeted, and like when I did my student teaching and the major, difficulties that I put up with were chewing gum and running in the hallway. Am I to understand that there are certain dynamics to this experience that are greater than that?
Absolutely. Those are definitely redirective behaviors that we learn as teachers to address. But more than that, I would say that our teachers are teaching in the exact communities that we're here to serve. I mean, on average, I'd say probably 80% or higher free and reduced lunch. And I know specifically in Chicago, where many of our local Minnesotan Teach for America Corps members trained, as well as in Watts, if you know where that neighborhood is in Los Angeles, that percentage of poverty and some of the challenges around violence and just a history of poor educational equity is an instrumental and really transformational experience for those core members who then have that working with both parents, teachers, existing teachers within those schools, and then come here to Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then
go ahead,
question, if I could, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So, and Ms. Allswager, as a dues-paying member of Education Minnesota, and somebody who's still in the classroom every morning, and talking to some other teachers and seeing people in the hallway and in the faculty room, faculty lunchroom, etc. So there is some discussion or buzz, and I want to find out how much is real and how much is not. And is there a concern that these members, whether it's Teach for America or whoever, coming into Minnesota then won't buy into the membership of the teachers union, or is there a concern from your end? It's all from our end, I should say. Thank you.
It's all swearing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bills, I am so glad you asked that question, because this has nothing to do with who will be our members or how much money will come into Education Minnesota. Nothing. This only deals with quality. And I, you know, since you brought it up, there isn't an issue that has generated more emails to legislators than this one, even more than our statewide health insurance, if you can imagine that. On, you know, one notice to our members last year, it just surprised us. Our members want to make sure that we have quality. This is nothing to do about our financial well-being or building the union. This has only, it only deals with quality in the classroom. And so let's work together to make sure that we have the standards in place to make it work.
Thank you, Ms. Allswager. Representative Bills, do you have
Thank you. I just wanted to, kind of as a last statement, I actually have a Broadfield social studies degree. I had 3 courses in economics. My passion for learning was, I have a BA in history, but my passion in teaching became economics. And I think that's what makes great teachers, and any teacher or former teacher sitting at this table knows that there are individuals who are very passionate about teaching, and regrettably so. We have all probably seen teachers who lose their passion for teaching, but the passion is what's behind the career, and I think that these people show an incredible amount of passion working in Teach for America and programs like it. So more of just a statement, but thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And thank you to all of our testifiers. Before we move on, this is a public hearing. Is there anybody in the public who would like to speak for or in opposition to this bill? Okay, seeing none, we can move on. There are some amendments. Chair Garofalo, any other? We don't appear to have any other amendments. Would you like to
Mr.
make
Chair,
any comments?
There are 2 amendments in the packet. I think you want to maybe offer those to see if there's an author who wants to present those. Or
I apologize. I thought I was offering that right now. Would anyone like to offer those amendments? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the PE3 amendment.
Should have done it Representative Kelly's way.
Representative Mariani offers the DE3 amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, I'll try to do this relatively quick. The DE3 amendment basically, members, it's first of all to delete everything amendment. So it would strike out the language in House File 63 and replace it with language from House File 3, the first engrossment. And frankly, members, House File 63 and House File 3, first engrossment, has some pretty strong overlaps, but there are also what I think are some important distinctions. And let me just also say that when the Policy Committee heard this issue last week, and we had a terrific day of testimony that day, the committee moved both of those bills to this committee. It is my hope and my intent that this committee will have an opportunity to vote on both of those bills in honor of the actions of the policy committee. And so this is how I'm proposing that we do it. House File 3. It's fair to say House File 3 enjoys really good bipartisan support. It is language that reflects pretty much very closely the bill that we had last year, which had very strong bipartisan support, and in fact the chair was an ally with me in on that bill through last session. And so with however, with all due respect to the chair, I think I've got the better bill. So in addition to the bipartisan nature of this bill, as reflected by its history and also by the support that it's engendered till now in the session, there are two issues I want to raise quickly for you in terms of what distinguishes them. And I would say that there are issues that have to do with focus. So this would be policy language that focuses the intent of the bill, as well as what I'll term additional quality controls to maximize getting the best out of the policy. In other words, getting the best out of teachers that we'll be placing in front of our kids in Minnesota. So on the focus front, clearly what House File 3 does not include is the reference to the reciprocity provisions. Section 2 of Representative Graffel's bill and the subdivision 6 in Section 3 of his bill. You know, in my mind, and I think we heard some good testimony today, but in my mind, I want us to be able to think about different approaches sort of one at a time, if you will. And the focus that I want to put before you is that the intent of House File 3 isn't only to get alternative pathway teachers, if you will, in front of our kids, but it's also to do that in a way in which we're feeding a high quality alternative pathway program here in Minnesota, so that these students, these teacher candidates, are coming through a process that's unfolding inside of Minnesota. And so my intent very clearly, we're not that far apart, Representative Graffel, my intent very clearly is to drive a vibrant, energetic, high-quality teacher ed program, alternative teacher ed program, if you will, in Minnesota, and really stay focused on that. On the second issue of the quality controls issue, a couple of things. What House File 3, what this amendment does, is it sets the conditions for the assignment of an alternative pathway program based on addressing certain critically important unmet needs in Minnesota. Certainly, I think Representative Graffel would argue that his bill allows for that because it's a broader, you can have an alternative pathway program in Minnesota. The language in this amendment would say you can have it in order to meet these important needs in our state. And there's basically three. A teacher shortage in a district, lack of teacher diversity compared to the cultural diversity that exists in the student population of the school, or a need to eliminate the academic achievement gap. So in other words, what I'm saying is I think we do have a healthy teacher ed program in traditional program in the state of Minnesota. However, I think it needs to be complemented by an additional healthy alternative pathway program that can meet the needs that program is currently not meeting. I think it would be a stretch for us. I think we need to be careful with our rhetoric to make sure that we're not saying that our traditional higher ed programs are total failures in the state of Minnesota. And I've not heard anyone make that argument. And it's borne out by some of the great student academic outcomes that we have in our state. But we also know that we have kind of two types of student academic outcomes. And in particular, there's this issue of the cultural race-based academic achievement gap. And so my goal, my plea, if you will, for you is to structure a program that's deliberate and intentionally focused on that first and foremost. And we heard powerful testimony from the Hiawatha folks in the previous committee as well, from directly from other communities of color about the importance of that. The amendment also calls for a program to have a connection with higher ed, and that's why I asked the question about the University of North Carolina. I didn't know about that connection with TFA there. And of course, here TFA has a connection with, a formal connection with Hamlin. In other words, what I'm looking for here is not to leave it to chance that a high-quality alternative pathway program will have a high-quality influence on our higher ed systems, but in fact, to direct it to do that by setting up the expectation, the mandate that there be a connection between a higher ed institution and such a program. And we heard testimony briefly earlier about the benefits of being able to do that. Finally, the amendment has the provision to employ what's called the teacher performance assessment evaluation system of our teacher candidate programs. This is emerging high-quality stuff that you're going to hear more about. Board of Teaching is working feverishly to implement such an assessment framework of our programs in our state. And basically, members, and I would hope that no matter what happens here on this bill, that we can really come together around this TPA issue, because it really shifts the expectation we're going to measure effectiveness and worth not just based on inputs, not just based on the fact that you took a number of courses, for instance, but also based on the fact that you can demonstrate your effectiveness in some key areas of planning, data collection and use pertinent to your student population, and then adjusting instruction accordingly. And so at the end of the day, with the TPA provision in it, basically it would require, and Chair Erickson alluded to this earlier, that it would require any teacher ed program, all teacher ed programs, to meet that criteria. And that's currently not in House File 63, but it is in the amendment. Members, I'll close by saying this, that a number of people have been very careful to say, this is not a TFA bill. I think much of our language, where it's in common, has been influenced to a large degree by TFA, because I think we have recognized it as a 20-year-old program to be a high-quality program. But one of the things I want us to also think about is that because neither of us are calling it, naming TFA in state statute, other alternative pathway programs. It opens the door for other alternative pathway programs. And that's fair, but we don't want just any alternative pathway programs. We want high-quality pathway programs, and that's what the more prescriptive set of expectations lay out in the D3 amendment. And so, members, I would ask your support for that provision and stand for any questions.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Sam Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I spent a reasonable amount of time last year working with Representative Mariani in support of his alternative licensure efforts. At that time, I'm a co-author on House File 3 this year. Before that, I took a whole raft of trouble from close and longtime friends, and I think a couple of busloads worth of constituents as well, who visited with me one way or another over that. And the key issue always was assuring that we continued to have highly qualified teachers in Minnesota classrooms. And I think back to the TIMS studies, where Minnesota always breaks out well above the pack, even internationally, in our science education. And we've always explained that by the high standards we have for science teaching, in particular, in Minnesota. When I look at House File 63 versus the DE3 amendment, I think we see some pretty stark differences in terms of being able to look not my constituents in the eye, but the kids in the schools in the eye, about assuring them that the teacher standing in front of them is highly qualified to be there. The TPA language that's in the DE3 amendment that was added in the policy committee, in the reform committee, on a bipartisan basis, after TFA testified in favor of it, sets a high bar and a high standard for all teachers. That's lacking in House File 63. The connection with higher education that Ms. Brecky talked about the importance of to TFA in North Carolina is in the DE3. And that ongoing support and reflection and direction that the candidates, the core members, receive is an important part of in strengthening their teaching and supporting their teaching. That's present in the DE3 amendment. It's absent in House File 63. Representative Garofalo opened today by talking about the key importance of teacher effectiveness. And we've seen in this committee the statistics about what a year of an ineffective teacher, the impact of that on a student's life. The DE3 amendment is the one that assures the child that whether the teacher in front of them got there through a traditional route, as Representative Bills and Representative Erickson and Representative Greiling and I and others in this room took, or an alternative path took, is qualified, prepared, and ready to be there. And most importantly, as Ms. Carvalho spoke of, the importance of allowing teachers to demonstrate their effectiveness. It's only the DE3 amendment that requires these alternatively licensed teachers to demonstrate their effectiveness coming out of their student teaching experience and walking into that classroom for the first time. So if we think that our students are the most important people in the classrooms, then I think we need to make sure that the teachers in those classrooms are as well prepared, whether it's traditional preparation or alternative preparation, when they walk in the door. I'd ask for the members to support the DE3 amendment.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And rather than ask a bunch of questions, maybe I'll make a series of comments and observations about the DE3. And I was not privy to the discussion, which sounded like it was a good one, in the Education Policy Committee. But unfortunately, we don't have the choice here to advance both Representative Garofalo's and Representative Mariani's bill. We got an either-or decision to make because this is a delete all. But a couple of things. On line 3.26 of the DE3, it says the Board of Teaching may approve teacher preparation programs. And I remember, I think it was in our Education Policy Committee last year, or 2 years ago, early in my tenure, when Representative Abler said, if your bill says may, you don't have a bill. And so if it's permissive, we're simply suggesting that the Board of Teaching may do this. So I'd see that as a bit of a challenge with the DE3. And on lines 3.31 and 3.32, there's another potential barrier to the implementation of this, in that you've got to have some kind of a negotiated agreement by the school district and the exclusive representatives of the teachers in that district. So there's another potential hoop to jump through, it seems to me. And then on top of that, as I look at on line 2.3 to 2.14, this definition of the measures for teacher effectiveness, or TPA, or whatever the term is for it, I could easily read into that, assuming that these are rules promulgated by the Board of Teaching, which is very kind of baked into the existing higher ed curriculum and content areas. I could easily see, when I read these definitions, that the definition of teacher preparation would simply mimic the requirements of a formal higher education program. And so, in essence, you might be forcing these, you know, kind of alternative pathways effectively through the traditional pathway just by the way those rules would promulgate these various conditions. So I guess I just think if our intention is to actually make an advance on this, giving it a may in statute, requiring it to go through some administrative, bureaucratic, and local, you know, political machinations that may never take place, and then opening it up to the possibility that these performance requirements may in fact simply mimic the traditional pathway, I'd say we have some significant barriers to implementation. So again, I wasn't privy to the discussion. Maybe these areas are all really fully addressed in the DE3 in ways that I'm not aware of. I'd welcome any responses from Representative Mariani to my points, but I would see those as barriers to the DE3, and at this point would definitely argue for the original bill, Representative Garofalo's bill, and a vote against the DE3.
Chair Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, first of all, I want to thank Representative Mariani for his work this year, last year, the year before that, and previous to that. It's been said that the pioneers take the arrows, and Representative Mariani, I think you got a quiver full of arrows stuck in you on this issue, so I want to repeat my comments that I made on the House floor last year, that no one can doubt your sincerity on this issue, and we're going to get it done this year. We're going to get it done. It's going to be in large part because of the work that you've undertaken and you will be taking in the future. Mr. Chair and members, I am opposed to the Mariani Amendment. I'll just offer a couple of thoughts. One is the issue of linking or delinking to higher education institutions. Let's make sure that I'm not being critical in any way, shape, or form about our existing higher education institutions. This is simply a philosophy of removing barriers and obstacles to progress. And we want to make sure that these units have flexibility, both operationally and structurally, to implement these programs and be successful. And in addition, we want to make sure there's no dependencies for these groups to be able to move forward. Second of all, as I was discussed earlier, is the issue of reciprocity, and you heard from earlier testifiers. This is a big issue. And we heard somebody sit up here and say, and they led their questions with, do you want your kids to be taught by dot, 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 and kind of fill in the blank. And I would just submit to the members the following, and that is, do you want your kids to be taught by anyone but the most qualified person to teach in that classroom? And I know that we're all smart. The chair's smart, I'm smart, every member of this committee is smart. But, you know, I think Mr. Blankenship's a pretty smart guy. He's a heck of a lot smarter than me. And I trust him to make the right decisions for what's good for student achievement. And so, Mr. Chair and members, I respectfully oppose the amendment and would ask for a no vote.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I'll try to be brief. I know we're running out of time here, but if I may, first of all, if I could, and thank you, Representative. Downey. God, I'm blanking out. I keep thinking Representative Keith, you know. And, thank you for pointing out a couple of issues. There actually are some wording issues that I was not able to tighten up, but I do want a clean vote on this, and so if I may, I would like to incorporate as the author's amendment on line 3.26, the change of may from must. So, Mr. Chair, I would just incorporate that into my amendment, and I think Representative Garofalo can, I think that's pretty standard for us to be able to do that.
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll change that as an oral amendment.
And so incorporate that, and then very quickly, I do want to speak on this issue about 3.30 to 3.33. And this issue does, this language does say that you should have a written agreement between the school board and the exclusive representative. And folks, I understand the risks here for someone who supports the presence of a stable, high-quality alternative pathway program. I mean, the risk is, hey, the local folks, local reps, you know, given the fierce resistance that we had the last couple of years from the statewide organization, will find a way to not sign off on that. And I think we should absolutely, honestly wrestle with that issue. My posture on this has been that and I said this in the policy committee, that it's critically important for us to be successful that people on the ground own whatever it is we wind up passing. And I've been here long enough to know that and seen where we've passed good policy and folks on the ground have found all sorts of ways not to make it happen. And so the expectation here really is just to force the issue. And clearly, in Minneapolis, we had a local exclusive representative step forward with the school district and sign off on the existence of inviting TFA into that school district. I presume the same thing happened in Brooklyn Center. They do have an exclusive representative in the collective bargaining district. Obviously, the charter schools, the local teachers, or the teachers on the charter schools, have TFA, in this case, have been embracing of that. If we try to place folks where folks don't want them, it's not a good situation. And so this is really sort of my calling a bluff out to the adults out on the ground that, you know what our expectations are, you know what we want. Look at the conditions, look us square in the face and tell us that you can meet those conditions without an alternative pathway program existence in your school, or move ahead as adults and get the high, get that broad net to bring in high quality candidates in. So anyway, I thank you, Representative Donnie, for raising that issue. It gave me an opportunity to articulate what my thinking is about that, but I do understand the honest struggling with that.
Thank you, Representative Marini. Okay, we do have one final comment, then we do want to move forward by Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to ask for a roll call vote.
So noted.
And I think Representative Downey said it best when he said, unfortunately, today we're looking at an either-or. And I don't think that was a necessary problem that we should be voting on today, either-or. I'm going to definitely support Representative Mariani's bill, and I would concur with the people who say he's sitting there with a lot of arrows and knives and things that he had to deal with last year, and Representative Davney did as well, and I'm picking some still out of my back as well. And I think there was a lot of courage and a lot of movement last year, despite the strong opposition of the teachers union. This year, they are much more at the table and willing to consider the Mariani bill. And I think there's a lot of room for a lot of good synergy and compromise. But yet today we're left with the majority party going to discard all the good work that they supported last year in the Mariani bill. And then we're going to pass the Garofalo bill that's the or. And I just think that is a way to force people like us who have put a lot of good effort and faith and courage and heart into this having to vote no then at that point. And I think that's an unfortunate dynamic for our students.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Mariani has moved the DE3 amendment with the oral amendment on line 3.26, changing the may to must. And there has been a roll call requested, so there will be a roll call. And any other discussion? Not, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Kelly?
No.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Van Zyl?
No.
Representative Bills?
No.
Representative Reinert?
Yes.
Representative Davney?
Yes.
Representative Dietrich?
Yes.
Representative Downey?
No.
Representative Erickson?
No. And I wanted to make a statement that I actually laid the groundwork for all of this in 4 and 6, so I got a few arrows too, and I tell you, I got shot a few times.
Representative Fabian?
No.
Representative Greiling?
Yes.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Mariani?
Yes.
Representative Myra?
No.
Representative Peterson? Representative Quam? Representative Slocum?
Yes.
Representative Ward? Representative Woodard?
No.
You. There being 6 ayes and 12 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. We do have another amendment here before the committee. Who offers that amendment?
Mr. Chair, I had several, but I'm not going to offer the other amendments.
Okay. Is that the 8-4?
Let's make sure. That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. That Chair Garofalo, do you have any other comments?
If there's no other testimony from members of the committee, then I can give the closing argument. Is that?
Just one moment.
Yes.
Representative Briner, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, there's just a couple of things I'd like to point out. I could have pointed them out in the context of Representative Mariani's amendment, but I think they're totally appropriate here. Two differences between the Garofalo bill and the Mariani bill. One is a small one, and I'm surprised it hasn't come up today, but throughout our discussion up until now, in addition to a bachelor's degree, we've had a requirement of a minimum 3.0 grade point. And the reason I point that out is Teach for America, in their testimony, emphasized recruiting the best and the brightest. That requirement is not in the Garofalo bill. And while I guess I would like Representative Garofalo to speak to its absence, because I do think it speaks deeply to the quality issue. But in addition to that, and that'll maybe be an opportunity for Representative Garofalo to comment on this too, but I wanted to comment on Representative Downey's, the doubt he put in the minds of people who might support a teacher performance assessment and the language in the bill. And my reasoning there is, I just want to say that TPA is a longstanding body of research, and our Board of Teaching is working on it now. It came out of Stanford. It's being piloted across the country. It has a very rigorous history of validity and reliability, and would not be subject to any arbitrary whims of higher education institutions. So it does bring a level of rigor and credibility and quality to the alternative licensure legislation. So I think its absence, as well as the 3.0 requirement, make our Representative Garofalo's bill weaker.
Thank you, Representative Briner. Chair Garofalo, if you have any comments. And then in the interest of time for our other bill, Representative Greiling did have one last comment.
Mr. Chairman, I'll address Representative Briner's question in my closing comments.
Thank you. Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, I would request a roll call on the bill.
Thank you. Roll call has been requested. Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I want to address the issue from Representative Briner. The issue of the grade point average was added as comfort language last session. Going perspective, when we're looking at teacher quality, what people can do, certainly GPA is a requirement or a factor. However, we're looking at things, we want to make sure there's things people can do. They can't do anything reactively to improve their grade point average. That's a factor in it. I will say that there are cases to be made for and against that. But again, legislatively, that was added to the original legislation. Certainly would not say that I'm opposed to it, nor in favor of it, but we'll be willing to have a conversation about it in the future. And Mr. Chairman and members, I just want to thank you for a thoughtful and reasonable dialogue today. I am very confident that this legislature and Governor Dayton will reach agreement on alternative pathways for licensure, and I look forward to every member of the committee at some point in the process being able to support it. Thank you.
All right. Chair Garofalo renews his motion that House File 63 be passed and referred to Ways and Means. A roll call has been requested. Any other discussion? Okay. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Kelly.
Yes.
Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Anzels.
No.
Representative Bill.
Yes.
Representative Reinert.
No.
Representative Dabney.
No.
Representative Dietrich.
No.
Representative Downey.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Fabian.
Yes.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Loon.
Yes.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Myra.
Yes.
Representative Peterson. Representative Quam. Representative Slocum.
No.
Representative Ward. Representative Woodard.
Yes.
There being 12 ayes and 6 nays, the motion is approved, and the bill is being House File 63 is recommended to pass and be referred to Ways and Means. as adopted, sorry. As amended.
Representative Depke? Yes. Come on down. Representative Depke, do you have someone to move your bill?
No.
Representative Loon moves House File 88 to pass and be referred to the General Register. Representative Depke, I'm going to ask you a favor. Unless the committee is exceptionally brief, which I don't anticipate taking place, we're going to be coming back after the floor session tonight. However, my understanding is there are members of the public who are here to testify.
Yes.
And not people who are paid to be here or work here. And for those members who came here to testify from the public, I would like to give their opportunity to testify to this committee so they don't have to sit around for the floor session. Representative Deputy Representative Norton, is that okay with you?
Of course.
Okay. So if you are a member of the public who wishes to testify either for or against House File 88, please come down to testify. We would request that you please keep your testimony brief. And members, we will be going slightly beyond the 2:15 deadline.
I have an amendment. Do you want me to do that first before we hear the
bill? Representative Depke, why don't we wait? Because I know that you're going to be here later.
Yes.
So we can do that then.
That's fine. No problem.
Thank you.
My first testifier is the business manager for the Fairboat Schools, and I'm going to let her say her own name.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Colleen Murdestar, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, and as Representative Depke indicated, I am the Director of Finance and Operations for Faribault Public Schools. I'm here today to express our support for House File 88 for the following reasons. We do believe that the decision-making authority that should rest with the school board and the local school districts, the superintendent, and the current law, the way it's written, takes that away. We also need the ability to determine the number of employees that most effectively serve our students in all categories, and the current legislation does not allow us to do that. This current legislation also creates a disincentive to hire additional staff in this area due to the burden of the maintenance of effort that currently exists. School districts do need the ability to put all costs on the table when it comes to budget reductions, and the current law allows this class of employees job protection that no other class of employee within the school district currently has. Also, as changes occur in collaboration between districts, if you are sharing costs of this type of personnel between districts and a district decides to pull away from that, as has happened in Faribault, we then are responsible to maintain the cost of that position without the ability to reduce that cost in conjunction with that group of students not needing the services that would be paid for with that. According to the financial information submitted to the Department of Education for the last fiscal year, 09-10, expenses in this area are over $200 million, and the $3 set aside only comes up to about $2.6 million. For Faribault Public Schools, we spend about a little over $1 million in these positions. The $3 set aside is only a little over $13,000. So many districts, almost all districts, are spending way more than the $3 set aside in these positions. Thank you for your time. If you have any questions, I'd be willing to answer them.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there other members of the public who wish to testify either for or against this bill? Seeing none, Representative Depke, the chair. We're going to take additional testimony after we're going to move the amendment here. So the chair moves the A1 amendment to the House File 88. Representative Depke, I believe this is simply changing the description of the enacting clause of the bill. There's no substantive change
to it.
Is that correct?
That's correct. It more accurately represents the description of the bill. It is it changes the description from to removing the maintenance of effort and set aside requirements for school personnel returning financial decision making to the school district.
Thank you, Representative Depke. Any questions or comments from members on this? All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We'll move on to additional testimony, because Representative Depke and Representative Norton, I know you'll be here later, so I'd like to take... You're not going to be here later, Representative Norton?
Representative Norton will not, so I would like her to testify church before we adjourn. That's all right, too.
Of course, Representative Deputy. Representative Norton, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to apologize. This, I have a bill as well, and we're hearing Representative Deputies, but I've received much information from the counselors, and so I would like to say a few words about the bill, and then Representative Deputy can talk later. This is a very straightforward bill, and I want to say what this bill isn't. This bill isn't about cutting counselors or any staff from a school. This isn't about devaluing the role of counselors or the need for counselors. If you haven't heard before, you certainly will hear today, you know, we ranked 49th in the country on the counselors. The ratio is recommended to be one for 250 students, and many districts in the state are closer to 1 in 500 or 600 students. So we are horribly low in the number of counselors in the state of Minnesota. So this isn't about the need either. But these are very tough fiscal times, and this bill is an effort to provide maximum flexibility for our local school districts and to put the control and decision-making where it really belongs, which is at the schools. So every district has different needs. It's not one-size-fits-all. As many of you know, we come from different parts of the states with different constituencies, and I can tell you some of the smaller districts down in southern Minnesota are desperate. They only have one classroom of second grade and one classroom of third grade, and this maintenance of effort is causing them to have to consider cutting the only classroom teacher they may have for a grade and consolidating classrooms with large class sizes. And I suspect that we won't see a great change in cuts to counselors because of removal of maintenance of effort. But for those districts who are in desperate straits right now, they do need this flexibility from us. And so just know, my background is I served on our school counselor advisory committee in my school district for many, many years. I'm a strong supporter of counselors, and will work in the future to make certain that we improve counselors and the ratio in the state of Minnesota. But these are tough times, and we need to do the right thing. And so I was chair, and am happy to sit beside Representative Depke in an effort, a bipartisan effort, to do the right thing for our schools right now. So thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you, Representative Norton. And Representative Norton's a perfect example of those who are under the illusion that I'm actually in charge of this committee. I'm not. So, Mr. Moe, if you'd like to come down to the table.
M-O-E?
Yeah, it is M-O-E. Yeah, M-O-E, Moe. Oh, for, yeah. Welcome to the committee.
What a coincidence. When everyone says Pac Moe, my wife gets worried.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Yeah, my name is Chris Moe, and I am the president of the Minnesota School Counselors Association. I've seen many of your faces before. I also work in South Washington County at Park High School, and I work with about 130 at-risk kids. So I have a great ratio, but I'm not, as you know, it's 771 in the state of Minnesota. So Chairman Garofalo and members of the committee, thank you for giving me this time to talk. And I'll make it brief, but I want to make my message clear. I would come back tonight, but I got parent-teacher conferences. So as we, you know, the maintenance of effort basically has been put in place so we can maintain the minimum number of school counselors and support staff we already have in the state. And as you know, the numbers are pretty pathetic. And we've been at this at rate for about over 20 years. So it's kind of become the status quo, which is unfortunate, because we have seen the increase in mental health issues that these kids are going through. I know you've heard testimony before about the number of suicides that have been going on throughout the state. Anoka had 9 last year. We've had some down in South Washington County. Even I got a counselor from Redwood Falls in the southwest rural area that had 3 over the past 2 years. So it's not just inner city. It's not just the suburbs. It's all throughout the state. And so we continue to work hard. And if you take away the maintenance of effort, then what's our ratio going to be? 1,000 to 1? And then how many suicides is it going to take for us to realize, you know, we got to do something about this? And you may think, oh, well, it's only a few suicides, but just think of the families and what they're going through. And if they don't have someone there for their child to give them the support they need. This morning at 8:30, I had a girl in my office, 17-year-old senior, crying in tears, mascara all over, and she was depressed because her family got the 30-day notice that they need to be out of their house. Otherwise, you know, she's worried that she's going to be homeless, and how is she going to get back to school? And that's her big concern. And if I wasn't there for her, who is going to be there for her? And I just got a text about an hour ago
from a suburban school counselor who just said the ambulance was there to deal with a ninth grade suicide. So it just continually gets worse. And so what is it going to take for us to realize that this is an issue? If we don't focus on these kids' issues, how are they going to get in the classroom and learn? So that's why I'm here, to support school counselors, and I'm opposed to the House File 88. So with that being said, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mill. Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair, I have a question, but first off, I would just like to say that I am very concerned about the holes in the safety net, and while it's very convenient to always blame teachers, as a classroom teacher, I want to blame counselors also. I want you to share the blame for all the ills in society. And with that being said, I'd like to know, Representative Depke, how many positions were hired as a result of the $3 increase before the maintenance of effort?
Very few were hired, but the maintenance of effort, and I do have testifiers to this, which I would like to bring down. The Association of Metropolitan School Districts are here, and we do have a run for you that's in your packet that gives you an idea of what the money was before and what it still is. But I think that you have to listen to the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, AMSD. I've got a whole list of testifiers that would be glad to answer specific questions about what's going on in the schools as far as the counselors are concerned right now.
Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's with really, really great reluctance that I even say this to the committee and to the author. But over 40 years ago, as a first-year teacher, I had a suicide. And I beg you to reject this piece of legislation. I beg you to vote no. I beg us all to look for other ways of dealing with this dilemma we have, all going back to revenue and all ultimately dealing with the relationship of the legislature and state government and local autonomy of elected school boards. So please find it in your heart to vote against this, whether it's tonight or later on in the session.
The next testifier we have is Dr. Where's the list? Dr. Walter Roberts. He's not here. Okay. Mr. Campo. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Actually, Mr. Chair, Dan Campo, I represent the Minnesota School Counselors. I'm happy to defer until later if there's somebody else here who needs the time real quickly when we come back tonight. I'm happy to testify.
Well, Mr. Campo, my understanding is I have Mr. Kite, Ms. Kelleher, Mr. Kroonquist, and you. So I think it's all, I think you're all on par. Unless, is there another member of the public who wishes to testify for or against this bill? I don't believe so. So you're up if you'd like. Otherwise, you can wait around if you'd like, if you prefer.
No, I can try and make my testimony relatively brief, but with all respect to the over 1,000 counselors in the state, it might just take me a little bit of a minute. Members of the committee, what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about is the history of the Safe Schools Levy. For those members who are new here, and maybe for some others who weren't around at the time it was created, the Safe Schools Levy came about after Columbine. And basically, it's a reaction to try and put in another stream of funding to help ensure safety in schools. And there's several different areas that there's active and then there's preventive ways of ensuring that safety. Now, I have been the lobbyist for the Minnesota School Counselors for, I believe this is the sixth legislative session. The school counselors, since I've been here, have either been next to last or dead last in the ratio of student to counselors in the nation. We're either 48th or 49th very consistently. Several years ago, we worked with the legislature. There were members who were very concerned about the prevention aspect within the Safe Schools Levy. The idea being, when you look at a Columbine, by the time a child does bring a gun to school, we've already lost. And so by increasing the prevention aspect, we can catch things like, I mean, that's the worst case scenario, but it does happen in Red Lake, places like that. We're seeing an enormous amount of suicides. We're also trying to increase graduation rates. So those pieces all tie in with the Safe Schools levy. At that time, what was passed was a $3 increase in the Safe Schools levy to bring it from $27 to $30. And that money was dedicated to student support services staff, counselors, and others. Basically, the idea here was not to force districts to hire, but to provide an alternate revenue stream to entice them to hire. Now, to give you a little history, after enactment, we can't find any districts that hired counselors. The legislature came back, I believe it was two sessions later, and said, look, if you know, to basically to correct this issue, and said, if you're not going to hire these people, then due to the fact that in the counselors, you know, 770 to 1, we're going to set a minimum standard. Now, we're not saying what we want to achieve or attain as a standard, but we don't want any more cuts. We're already at the bare minimum, and we do have problems like suicides and graduation rates and things. So maintenance of effort, well, yes, it is a mandate, and it's not perfect. It's not meant to be a mandate where I wouldn't feel as comfortable as their lobbyist if, say, we were 30th in the nation. 20th in the nation would be awesome too, but we're dead last. So we're talking about a floor for these people and a bare minimum. The other things I wanted to talk about is, if you really look at maintenance of effort, well, it's actually in looking at the bill on House File 88, lines 2.11 to 2.13, ending in clause 6. This is the piece that was originally passed. The school district must set aside $3 per pupil under paragraph A, clause 6. That was to entice districts to do it. Well, they didn't spend the funding on that. So then maintenance of effort was put in afterwards. So I know that the discussion is a lot about maintenance of effort. However, there are really two issues here. One is a revenue source that was meant to be proactive, and another one is maintenance of effort. I think at this point I probably can stop and let everybody else testify, but I would encourage legislators to take a look at those things as separate things, one being the $3 per pupil, the other being maintenance of effort. And I would encourage members to vote against this legislation. We think it's very harmful, and I have 1,000 members that are very concerned about the ratios and trying to keep up with students. It's not about the idea of hiring for jobs. It's not about the idea of a class of people that become untouchable. This is about the fact that I have a client here who's getting messages about suicides that are happening. It's about a triage situation. So in essence, sometimes maybe the philosophy of this should be, we don't want a mandate, but as a bare minimum, it's just a civil safety standard. So thank you, members.
Thank you. Any question for members, for Mr. Campo?
Chair,
thank you very much for your testimony.
Yeah, Chair Garofalo, as the author of the bill, I haven't really had a chance to explain this bill before.
Go ahead, Representative
Depke.
Mr. Chair.
And you're kind of deciding how they'll come up, but it's okay with me.
Representative Depke, what I'm thinking, and Representative Dabney, I'll call you. I'm going to offer my thoughts, and then we'll come to you. Representative Depke, I think what we're going to do is we're going to recess to the call of the chair at this time, and then you can present the bill when we come back after the floor session. But Representative Depke, hold on.
Okay.
That's what I think we're going to do. I haven't made a decision here. Representative Dabney, I wanted to get your input on this.
I appreciate that. Actually, I'm wondering if anyone from MASBO is going to be around once we reconvene, because now that I'm looking at their handout, I've got some questions about it. And it went past me too quickly when the woman was at the table.
Is Ms. Dozeland here?
She is.
She'll be around later. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I can skewer her later.
The business manager from Faribault is still here. If you wanted to ask her about the numbers on the chart for her school district,
Representative
would that Daphne. Be helpful?
If I could, Mr. Chair, I recognize we're getting quite late here.
Yes, I appreciate the committee's indulgence just because the testifier, we don't want to sentence you to another couple hours here of purgatory in the House. So if you could, please. Representative Dadney, please do your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ma'am, what's your school district number?
656.
656. Because what occurred to me here is what you're presenting here is how many counselors each district has, what they spend, what the $3 generates, and then what the difference is. And so the difference for Faribault is $1,014,596.
Correct, between what we spend and the base maintenance of effort.
Mr. Chair, ma'am, do you really expect to generate... To not have any expenses for counselors above the $3 Safe Schools Levy amount?
The testifier.
Do not have any expenses above the $13,000?
Representative Downey.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, yeah, let me try to reformat it.
Sorry.
What you seem to be pointing at is the difference between what the $3 generates and your staff costs.
Correct.
And I start with the assumption that school funding covers staff costs, and that the $3 is merely that you are able to levy is merely a small contribution to that. But your spreadsheet seems to position an argument that you should be able to pay for school counselors out of $3 a student levy.
Ms. Marshall, the test part.
Yep. I think what the spreadsheet is trying to show is that the $3 that we currently levy for the set-aside for the school counseling positions is so minute when you look at the cost that all districts are currently incurring in all of those positions. For example, we spend the $1,028,000 on all of those positions. The $3 set-aside is only $13,000. So we are, in effect, subsidizing the $3 set-aside to the tune of more than $1 million.
Mr. Chair, ma'am, so are you calling paying staff a subsidy?
Ms. Mercedor.
No. I am saying that when the legislation was put through for the $3 subsidy, that districts were already spending well above that $3 amount on the counseling positions.
Representative Devin.
Mr. Chair, ma'am, did you expect that to change with the $3 requirement?
Ms. Mercedor.
In my opinion, at my district, no.
Representative Deming.
Well, Mr. Chair, there's a Mark Twain quote that's coming to mind that I won't.
All right. Appreciate you not
share. Thank you.
All right. Well, members, we will recess to the call of the chair. Please pay attention on the House floor at the close of the floor session. I will make an announcement.